This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Good afternoon to you. It is 12 o'clock on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, as we start a new show, a new week, a new month.
March.
Can you believe
January took forever. February, you blinked and it was gone.
Yeah, I know. Didn't it always seem to go that way?
Yeah. Well, it's that 28-day thing.
There you
Unless
go.
It's a leap year.
Yeah, because it would be what, the 30th of February right now if they had one. But it is not. I'm trying a new pair of headsets today, and I don't know if
How I do I sound?
So far.
Do I sound good?
I'm not used to it. They're Beats earbuds. I usually have the big earmuff headphones like you have on. I've got mine standing by. I might have to switch at some point. It's just a very different sound doing it this way with it jammed into my ears as opposed to the other way. And, of course, just, 3 hours ago, the end of the John Thompson era here at WSBT, and of course we wish John well. Here we go. I was sitting here, and both the mouse pads in the studio were John's. They had pictures of John and his wife on there. They were nice little customized mouse pads, and so I was sitting here right as we were getting ready to go on, pushing buttons. Not that everybody wants to hear this, but my mouse was not moving. And I'm like, what's going on? There's no mouse pad here. So I just found a more generic mouse pad. So my cursor is working.
We'll have to get some custom ones with our XFL jerseys on.
There you go. We will have to do that. He's Evan Sharpley. I am Sean Steyers. And the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is brought to you by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Visit SharpleyTraining.com. We are also brought to you by Zollman's Tire and Auto Care, trusted community service for over 40 years, by Luckleitner Door. Improve the look of your home with a new garage or entry door. Call 295-6311. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Together, we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Carmela's at McCree's, the Trattoria at McCree's. Try the Quattro Formaggio Pasta or San Francisco Panini today for lunch. Quattro Formaggio. I've never heard of that one.
But sounds good.
Does sound very tasty. Also by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Joel Ladig in Mishawaka. And Kurt Outdoor Living. Make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Kurt Outdoor Living. Well, a lot of stuff going on today. The NFL Draft Combine is underway. Indy insider Eric Hansen is there in Indy at Lucas Oil Stadium.
Is he participating?
He is not. He might have had a better time running the 40, though, based on what the tweets that I saw just before I came in here this morning. According to Kimberly Jones of NFL Network, neither Mike McGlinchey nor Quentin Nelson will run the 40 today with the rest of the offensive linemen because they both
Quentin
have
Nelson,
sore hamstrings.
Yeah, Quentin Nelson was getting warm, getting ready, and he said he felt a tweak in his hamstring and wanted to shut it down. So he's still going to participate in the rest, just not going to do that.
Kind of the useless exercise anyway for offensive linemen, the 40.
It definitely won't hurt you, but if you run fast, everybody thinks you're cool then.
Yeah, I mean, is it maybe a gauge of some athleticism or something since they're so big?
I would think so. Same with the vertical. They want to see how well you move.
Yeah.
If they're feeling up to it, possibly at the pro day, you know, they may add that to their schedule of what they work on.
Yep.
But because they're at the combine right now, you know, they don't have to do as much for the pro day.
The more important exercise for offensive linemen is the bench press. And Quentin Nelson pumped out 35 reps of 225 yesterday.
That's impressive.
Mike McGlinchey, 27 reps of 225. And the most notable thing about that, I'm not sure what Quentin Nelson's bench press was before Matt Bayless got here, but
right.
Mike McGlinchey said last spring his bench press pre-Matt Bayless arriving to take over the conditioning program, 16 reps of 225. He did 27 at the NFL Combine yesterday.
16's terrible.
Yeah, it is very terrible for someone, especially who wants to be not one, a Division I offensive lineman, but two, for someone who's a potential first round.
I'm fairly certain that if we wheeled a bench in here right now, I could do between 10 and 15. So if he was only doing 16, that's not very good.
So what was your number again? I was going to ask you that. Between what and what?
Between 10 and 15 right now, I think I could go for sure.
Okay. What were you? Did you ever?
We did, but with the quarterbacks,
that is important.
They were a little cautious with our range of motion and rotator cuff. So most of the time we went, if we were going a 225 test, we would have a stack of plates, or usually there'd be like a piece of wood that we would set on our chest, so that we were only getting to a certain degree. My best was 22, which I was, you know, I was very pleased with.
Solid number.
And my junior year, I one rep maxed 405, which was considerable amount higher than several of our running backs and receivers. So I was pretty strong, even compared to some of our skill guys. And so that was junior year and senior year we did that. But we didn't do too much of the 225 test. That was something reserved more for, you know, the other guys. But we still wanted to see where we were, so we did it.
Everyone wants to.
And each year when the combine comes around, I joke with everybody, because show me the lowest number from the combine, and I'm gonna go make that happen. I'll put a suit on too if you want me to, and do it that way.
Absolutely. Probably most important for the linemen on both sides of the ball, the linebackers, even defensive backs to an extent, fighting with receivers and sometimes tight ends.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think that a lot of the testing is pretty archaic. And that's why teams and GMs want to see the guys move and do position drills. You want to see your overall strength. You know, I'm surprised there isn't a squat test, to tell you the truth. I mean, you know, bench tells a certain story, and certainly offensive line, you know, you want to have a strong upper body on your punch, but your base is your lower half.
So if Evan Sharpley was running the NFL Combine, what would your top five the must-haves at the Combine?
If we're looking at pure strength moves, you know, I'd start with the squat. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even necessarily – I'm not a big fan of the one rep max. And really, Notre Dame has moved away with this too, where they're doing more speed-based work, where it's, okay, we know you're strong. You don't need to continue to put more weight on. How fast can you move it? And in today's age with technology, you can measure the velocity or the speed of the bar. So, you know, I'd look at getting guys between 3 and 5 reps and maybe setting it at 225 and seeing the type of speed output that they can move with, how fast they can move the bar up and down. Same with bench press, not necessarily how many reps you can do, because it's not like on the football field you're out there punching a guy 35 times on one play if you're an offensive lineman.
Right.
It's going to be the speed aspect of it. How fast are you moving a certain amount of weight? So I do that for squat, for the bench press, and then the deadlift as well. So those three moves, but instead of looking at how much you can do, we'd look at, you know, measuring the bar velocity that way. And there are some tests that, you know, aren't as popular. You know, I think you look at the 40 and the vert and all of those, those are more popular for people to watch. But, you know, range of motion, flexibility, those things are measured as well and maybe go overlooked, but are very important, you know, as far as when you're vetting these prospects on how they move, potential injuries. So outside of that, I'd go broad jump. Vertical would be in there too. The 40, you know, for the skill guys, it's nice to see. I would add some more change of direction. That's why I like to see the 3-cone and the pro agility.
Mm-hmm.
Those ones I like, and I'd even, you know, maybe add like a figure eight or, you know, when you're watching the skill work, you see, like with linebackers and running backs, you see the bags used, you see change of direction. So a lateral to a linear versus just see how fast you can run straight ahead. Because, you know, it's not very often that you're running in a straight line. It's still a good indicator of speed. I'm not trying to discount that. But, you know, more football-based moves by position, I think. And that's why the pro days exist. And, you know, some of the things that maybe aren't televised or aren't, you know, I guess as at the forefront of the testing is the position work. Because when it comes down to it, you know, these scouts are going to watch your film. They're going to see how you played. that's a big indicator. They're going to try to get practice film of you at your university and how you practiced, and then get an opportunity to see you actually move in person. As far as whether it be a pass set, a blitz, running routes, how you throw the football, those things, that's where the actual vetting goes. But what gets the most press certainly is you ran this fast, you jumped this high, you did this many reps.
You did this many reps on the bench press. Yep, that is right. So, all right. And if you're thinking about training, someone who's thinking about training, of course, Evan, who just rattled off all that knowledge right there, you can check him out at sharplytraining.com, and we'll be talking more about what's going on with Sharply Training. Sounds like you've got another pop-up camp coming up here at Kalamazoo pretty soon.
We have one this weekend. We're calling it the QB Lab Confidential. We're not releasing where it actually is unless you contact us.
So
it'll be at a secret location. And then we also have a hitting clinic at School of Hard Knocks in Niles, an off-site slugfest. Normally we do them at Sharply Training. We have 6 spots left open for that hitting academy tomorrow night.
Okay.
That's from 7 to 9. We'll turn the music on loud. If they have strobe lights, we might use those too. And we've got another hitting clinic next week in Kalamazoo, and then we'll be at South Bend Adams once again. We had 25 guys last week at South Bend Adams.
Very good.
For our quarterback lab. We'll be doing that on St. Patrick's Day. We'll be doing another quarterback lab there, and then the following week we'll be at Elkhart Central. And then back to South Bend the 24th for Teddy Ball Games. It's a hitting facility in South Bend. We'll be doing another slugfest there. So
a lot of
opportunities here coming up in this next month.
Sounds good. Very good. Just about 12 minutes after 12 o'clock with Evan Sharply. I'm Sean Stiers, Sean and Sharply, and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. So the pro day, you mentioned pro day a couple times for Notre Dame players.
March 22nd, I believe, yeah.
Right, and that's was going to get to that next because we just found out what the spring football schedule is going to look like for Notre Dame, and the pro day is part of it. It is going to be on Thursday, March 22nd, over at Notre Dame, and we have the full schedule. There's going to be a Brian Kelly spring football kickoff news conference at 2 o'clock Monday. That is 3 days from now, this coming Monday, March 5th, 2 o'clock, and you'll hear that here on 96.1 WSBT. You'll hear it live, the Brian Kelly kickoff spring news conference. And then over the course between March 6th and April 21st, the date of the Blue-Gold game, we will see 6 other practices, not including the Blue-Gold game. The media will be able to, and of course, we're not going to give the dates and all that kind of stuff, but essentially, we will see parts of 3 practices, and as of right now, there are 3 full practices that are going to be open. So we're going to get to see some different things over there. The partials are only about a 30-minute availability. Every once in a while, we'll get an extra period or two beyond the 30 minutes. So what we see,
and then there's usually one practice that is all special teams.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And they always have the coaches' clinic. So
right.
And then, so it's not just us, but there'll be a lot of other people who will be over there.
Primarily a lot of drill work that day, too.
Right, exactly. So there'll be a lot going on there. And, of course, the Blue-Gold game is April 21st. Tickets are on sale right now. That'll be the next chance for the public to see the Notre Dame football team, including Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book, the quarterbacks. And that's one of the bigger questions. We talked a little last week, the top 3 things each of us were looking to see this spring. We both brought up the offensive line, specifically the left side of the offensive line, but the quarterback situation is another one, especially after what we saw in the Citrus Bowl when Brandon Wimbush sat down toward the end of the first half and Ian Book stayed in for the remainder of the game. And Wimbush, he passed for 1,870 yards this season, 16 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Those numbers alone don't sound bad, but of course, under 50% completions, 49.5%. But he also ran for 803 yards and 14 touchdowns. So he accounted for 30 total touchdowns, which is just 2 behind the 32 DeShone Kizer had in his first year as a starter in 2015. Of course, he completed 66% of his passes, so 17% higher, a lot different look. But the obvious deficiencies as a passer aside, the rushing numbers, you can't push them aside either, because Notre Dame was 84 out of 92 in red zone scoring opportunities, 91% and 76% red zone touchdowns. And a big part of that was because of Wimbush's running ability.
Yeah, it was a huge step forward in that regard. I mean, they started the season out really hot. I mean, if they were getting to the red zone, they were scoring. And that was something that continued throughout. Anytime you have someone as dangerous as Brandon Wimbush running the football, you know, it gives you a lot of options in the red zone. And, you know, ended up, you know, breaking the record for most rushing touchdowns in a season for a Notre Dame quarterback. There's some good names. I mean, he's among some really good quarterbacks, and now he's at the top of the list as far as number of rushing touchdowns in one season. But when you look at Brian Kelly's offense, you know, it's still a pass-based offense, and to beat, you know, top-tier teams, unless you're, you know, a team like Army or Navy where all you do is run, you have to be able to consistently throw the football as part of it. It doesn't have to necessarily be a 70-30 split, but, you know, the completion percentage has to be up when you're given those opportunities. And you know, some of his biggest holes, and really the interception, you know, numbers were down. It was an inability to consistently complete passes. You know, I would have never thought or guessed before the season started he'd be at 50% throughout the entire season.
Exactly.
Not from what I had seen.
None of us would have.
Yeah, and I know in talking with Brandon on this topic, you know, he never really felt completely comfortable, and you could see it from the start of the season. And really, you know, the Georgia game was very telling, and I don't know if it was, you know, something then that creeped into his mind. I mean, he didn't have a lot of time to throw that game. You know, Georgia's speed laterally was very impressive. He was under duress for quite a bit of the game. And once that clock kind of speeds up and he was having success rushing the football then over the course of the next few games, that could change your mentality a little bit as far as how long you stay in the pocket. You know, do you lock on one receiver and then and then bail and start to run? So I think some of those things played into it. But certainly, you know, the next step for him, he's got to get that above 60%.
Yeah.
He has to, and he knows it.
So what are the things that you would hope to see from him this spring? Because just like the defense last year when it was first being installed, this is not something that Brandon Wimbush is just going to be able to radically change in a matter of a couple of months or a few practices. But what's the start of what you'd like to see from him this spring?
Well, there's a few things, and we've already discussed this a little bit. In college football, the film room, they do a great job of kind of breaking down and watching these films and seeing where some of these areas are. You know, his biggest issue was that 10 to 20-yard range or 10 to 19-yard range where they're intermediate passes, and usually that's where the majority of the defense is located. So you have to navigate through, but you have to have a much higher completion percentage. I mean, he was well below that 50% range. You know, he was 29 to 62 when thrown between that 10 to 19 yard range. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily it's a quick fix, but it's an area that shouldn't be that low. You know, we're talking, if you're looking, you know, 20 yards into, say, swings and slants and quick outs, you should be sitting at 60% right there. You know, you expect the numbers 20 plus where you're pushing the ball downfield for the percentages to go a little bit lower. And you know, unfortunately, it was that mid-range game where he really struggled.
Now, let me kind of, you mentioned that college football film room, and we've got these slides. There's a slide that they tweeted out, and it's actually on the front page of their website right now, too, if you go to collegefootballfilmroom.com. And they break the field down into nine quadrants. Mm-hmm. You've got 0 to 9 yards, and then you've got middle, left, and right. You've got 10 to 19 yards, again, middle, left, right, and then 20-plus yards, middle, left, right. So Brandon Wimbush had one of those quadrants. His best quadrant was 0 to 9 yards, to the right side of the field. He was 66%. His next best quadrant was the left side of the field in that same range, 0 to 9 yards, 52.5%. The next best after that, 52%, that was 10 to 19 yards to the left. That was really, so those were those corner fades to Equanimeous St. Brown that he was so good at. That was about his best pass. So he had, again, the best was the short to the right side of the field, 66%, and then the next two quadrants, 52%, 52.5%. So now let's compare that to Jake Fromm from Georgia, freshman quarterback. We got to see him. It wasn't spectacular by any means when we saw him early in the season when Notre Dame played Georgia at Notre Dame Stadium, but he obviously was able to be very effective and take Georgia a long way. So now Jake Fromm, he had one, two, three, four different quadrants where his worst completion percentage was 60.3%. And that was, and so that was 0-9 on the left. He had 66+% to also to the left from 10 to 19 yards, 79% over the middle short, and then 84, almost 85% 10 to 19 over the middle. So again, so now I'll look at that. 84% between 10 and 19 yards over the middle. Brandon Wimbush was 50% less than him in that quadrant. And that should be one of the easiest quadrants because it's right in front of you and it's not that far downfield.
Yeah. I mean, he did a nice job of, you know.
That's a lot of different numbers and everything.
In those winning areas, he was completing a high rate, a high clip.
Yeah.
And that in the 0 to 20 yard range, you know, his lowest was a 54.5 and highest being almost 85%. So, you know, he did a really nice job of in those areas of getting the ball to his guys. And then the other thing too, I think that's important to point out is, you know, he completed over 50% of his passes in under pressure situations too. So he was 12 of 26. This is in pressure, 12 of 26 on throws 10 or more yards down the field with 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And around 53%.
And now one other note for Brandon Wimbush, again, of the 9 quadrants, he was in the bottom 25th percentile in the nation in 6 different quadrants on the field, 6 of the 9 quadrants, whereas Fromm was in the bottom 25% in 3 of those quadrants. Fromm was in the top 25 in 5 of the quadrants. Wimbush was just 1, and that was long over the middle. 50% he completed, 7 out of 14, 3 touchdowns on 20-plus yards to the middle of the field.
And then just a couple other things to point out, too. The Notre Dame receivers, they had a drop rate of 16%. And for Georgia, you know, they were well below that. They were at just 6.5%.
Wow.
So, you know, the receivers did a nice job of helping him out. But one other thing, too, to point out with that, almost 20%, so just under 20% at 17.5% of his throws were uncatchable, Brandon Wimbush's.
Really?
So, you know, that's whether that was duress, that was throwing the ball away, there were some opportunities where he missed some guys that were open. Almost 20% of his throws that he was throwing were uncatchable.
And I know he's already talked a little bit, just some of the, we haven't got to talk to him yet, but just seeing some things out there where he's talked about needed to clean up his mechanics and things like that. And you've talked about it before. It's been a while, though. It was more during the season since we've really had a chance to talk about it. You worked with him privately last year when he was still on the scout team as well. So from that, what you saw this year, and again, going into the spring, maybe what are a couple mechanical tweaks that he can be thinking about?
Well, occasionally
spring.
When he missed, and when he did miss, he'd usually miss high.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a number of things. It usually starts from the ground. You know, so where his stride foot's going, what his hips are doing, and then we'll sequentially lead you up to what your arm action is doing. And at times he'd get a little long on his backstroke, which would lead to the tip being up at release and then the ball sails. It's not an uncommon mistake, and if it kind of goes unchecked, you know, can result in some things. But usually any inconsistencies in throwing are going to start from the ground. So that's the area that you address first is, you know, what's my base doing? You know, what's my stride foot doing? What's my push foot doing? What are my hips doing? And then sequentially work back up. So I think all too often quarterbacks that aren't hitting consistently, they look at my arm's got to be doing something wrong. They start there, and really the checkpoint should be, what's my base doing?
Mm-hmm.
Am I off balance? Am I getting to platform? On my off platform throws, am I still getting my hips into my throw? But we had talked a little bit about that the backstroke position on getting a little bit too far past the 90 degree bend, and then the tip of the football not being able to turn to get back downhill. So, you know, those are things that can be addressed. And you know, it's this is a whole, you know, opening up a whole can of worms for me, because at the high school level, there's no throwing program. At the college level, there's no throwing program for these quarterbacks. So, you know, where is the development actually taking place? So if there is an issue like there was last year, how do you fix it if you don't have a program in place to even start? You don't have a baseline. And that's one thing that, you know, I take a lot of pride in with the quarterbacks that come to our facility, is when they step in there, there's an expectation on the throwing program that they do. And that starts with arm care. It starts with J-band routines. It starts with resistance bands. And then they go through a throwing program that involves plyo care balls. They're soft, sand-filled, squishier, and you're able to really focus on acceleration and deceleration of your arm. So speeding your arm up to, you know, to create more spin on the football, to strengthen your arm up and focus on your elbow and shoulder, but also then the mechanics of the throw.
Mm-hmm.
So working through those mechanics, and that's where we start. And then we get to a weighted football routine. So we have 2 and 3 3-pound footballs, helps with grip strength, again, velocity, spin, distance thrown, but it really, really forces you to be cognizant on how you control the football, because it's 2 pounds and 3 pounds. If you are off on your backstroke, if you're off with something with your lower half and your legs, the ball's not going to turn the right way. And you can see it with the trajectory. So it gives really good feedback. But we have a baseline throwing program that I know high schools don't have, and I know colleges don't have, because I went through the same process. And, you know, what you do is you put your pads on, you put your helmet on, and you jog out to practice, and you try to get there 5 or 10 minutes early so that you can throw a little bit before, you know, your normal warm-up start.
And it's mostly just getting loose.
It's mostly, anything, well, really, right? It mostly is dinking around is what it is. There's no structure.
Uh-huh.
And then you could make your first throw on a move the field period, you know, a tempo period, which usually the media we see, that could be your first throw of the day. Or you might, you know, then you get right into following warm-up in that move the field period, right into rapid-fire throws with your position coach. You're not warm. You're not ready to go. So if something goes unchecked early in the season, it's just a constant buildup as the season progresses. So, you know, to have a throwing program in place, a baseline like that, it allows you to have the checkpoints on when something feels wrong. You know something feels wrong, and now you can go and you can fix that. So then once we get through our weighted ball progression with our throws, we get into regular throws, drops, movement, you know, off balance throws, awkward arm angles, all of those things. And then we have a cool down procedure. No high schools or colleges have that either.
Mm-hmm.
So then we go back to the J bands, back to the plyo care balls. We do, you know, range of motion work for our elbow and our shoulder, so that by the end of the season, you've continued your workload. You're able to monitor your workload, and you're throwing your best by the end of the season.
Now, the other thing, though, and it's all very interesting, the stuff that you're talking about, but once you get into the season, I think we've kind of mentioned this before, too, it's hard to correct a mechanical flaw.
Right,
because
and that's why I'm saying you have to have a throwing program that starts much earlier. It had to have started 2 months ago.
It's like, 1,000 reps, they say, to create muscle memory, right? So, I mean, that's a lot of reps without having to get on the, because if you're in a game, regardless of if it's football, throwing a ball, or any of the movements, just like Mike McGlinchey moving from right to left tackle, he talked about the different muscle memory, not this past year, but the year before that when he made the move, whether it's being a pitcher, a batter swinging the bat, a basketball player making a free throw or a jump shot or whatever it happens to be, if you're thinking about the mechanics of any of those actions during the game, you're slowing yourself down, and it's just you're not doing yourself any good. So that's why the off season is so important if you want to correct something like that.
But I can promise you that that's done on the players are doing that on their own.
Right.
And that's the disconnect. That's the issue. There isn't time in practice built around individual skill training at the quarterback position. You have 5 guys. You have to get reps. And it's less about let's fix this, this, and this. You either should have shown up to campus already knowing how to throw, or you're going to get left behind. Mm-hmm. It's going to continually be an issue. So if you aren't seeking out counsel or help from somebody else, and Brandon has a guy that he works with back home too, so I know it's something that he is seeking out counsel and working on his own. When you get into practice, and whether this is the fault of how practices are structured, it is about learning the offense and getting reps with your receivers, and then with the whole team. You don't have time to, all right, hey, guys, we're going to do a little video analysis right now of your throwing motion. We're going to, you know, we're going to bring out this high-tech, you know, right. slow-motion camera. We're going to break down your mechanics. You know, each guy we're going to be able to spend, you know, about 20 or 30 minutes with, and we're going to say, hey, here are the areas that you're doing a really nice job with. Let's look at your lower half. Awesome, right there. Okay, your backstroke is a little bit too long right before you're about to make your throw. So that's changing the trajectory of the football, and that's resulting in this happening, or your arm slot is too low.
But the thing is, it worked for him in high school, and it works for everybody. And it just like John Mooney, it came up a few weeks ago. Mooney has that little hitch at the top of his shot, but it's working for John Mooney. So there's no reason to try to correct a hitch when it's working. If it works, it's not an issue. But
right.
obviously it's when it doesn't work that sure. it becomes a much bigger problem. But it worked for all of them, mostly in high school, because they were such good athletes.
You can get away with some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But again, a lot of stuff that can be worked on in the off season and
not in practice, though.
I know quarterback coaches get knocks, but things like this, those guys are working on, correct?
No.
They're not working on that either?
Absolutely not.
They're just working on film and reads.
You're watching film. You need to know
where
the ball.
They're not even working on mechanics
when
they're doing that stuff. No kidding.
You're going to throw. I mean, you might get a cue here and there,
mm-hmm.
but the coaching staff is limited number of hours they can spend with players. So unless mm-hmm. it is structured, which I don't have any knowledge base on this being the case, unless you have it structured through the strength and conditioning program, there's not extra one-on-one time with the quarterback coach, you working on mechanics.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that when I came from high school to college, I was like, great, I'm in college. You know, it's going to be all this development, one-on-one time I'm going to spend with the coaches. Those guys are out recruiting. Those guys are breaking down film. Those guys are getting ready for practice. It's not that they don't want to. It's number one, they don't have the time or per the number of hours you are allowed to spend with on-field coaches, you might not be allowed to. So I spent a lot of time on my own taking extra drops, you know, throwing with receivers. You have to be very proactive mm-hmm. as a player to search out if it's other avenues or to search out avenues within the context of, say, the strength and conditioning program, because you have a little more leeway working on some of your skill work, you know, during strength and conditioning hours. And that's what a lot of guys did. Is they'd say, all right, we're done with our lift, we're done with our speed work. Hey, you know, Coach X, Y, and Z, who's on the strength staff, can you come out here and work me through some position specific moves that will be beneficial to whatever it is? But what you don't see on a lot of staffs are guys that are arm specialists or former quarterbacks. You know, you don't see that very often.
Right.
Some schools do it and take advantage of, but I would say that that's not the norm.
Interesting. All right, 12:33. Got to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Notre Dame basketball. Bonzi Colson making his return to the lineup a couple of days ago. Looked good for the Fighting Irish. And Mike Bray, you'll hear from Bonzi Colson. Talked on the Coach's Show with Mike Bray last night. Here's some comments from Bonzi about how he felt. They get to take on Virginia tomorrow, and Virginia narrowly won last night. So coming down the stretch.
That was
here.
A crazy finish.
Yeah.
Down four with like a second left.
I know. They managed to pull it out. But so a tough test coming up, but we'll see what happens for the Fighting Irish. That's coming up tomorrow here on WSBT. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. .1237 as we roll through the noon hour, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We talk a little football, some combine, some Brandon Wimbush. In the first segment, we have a little game we're going to play here in a little bit.
Do we have a quick moment to play a quick game for you on the NFL Combine?
You want to do it right now? Or do you want to wait?
That's up to you.
Let's talk a little Bonzi first.
All right, let's talk Bonzi.
We'll do that. Next, so
he's back.
Bonzi Colson, finally back. We've been speculating and wondering.
And I even said he was not going to play. I said it. I was surprised.
I think it was almost like, and maybe there were some serious, serious concerns about this week last time, because first Mike Bray is, oh, we're getting back, and then, well,
he played
might
the
not
cards
play
pretty
all,
tight, though.
And,
Yeah, he really kind of kept
his
guessing.
I think he might have undersold it a little bit, like, okay, he's probably, you know, he's not going
to. That's got to be why, to keep everyone's expectations down. But, I mean, the team.
But they've been raised now.
That's right. Raised off the chart. Well, I don't know about off the chart. But, I mean, he played 21 minutes, and he missed a double-double by a rebound. Yeah. So, I mean, he came out.
Firing.
Talk about energy. That's what it's always been. 8 of his 12 points, rather, on 4 of 6 shooting and 5 rebounds in the first 6 minutes and 45 seconds of the game. Not bad production.
It's a way to start the game.
No kidding.
And I think for a lot of guys, too, it was great to see him out there. You know, that reassurance, I'm sure, did a lot.
And I think it was, this is no disrespect to Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh is what Pittsburgh is. They're an 0-18 ACC team. They didn't win an ACC game this year. So it was almost like an early season non-conference type Chicago State or somebody. They're a little bit better than that, but you know what I'm saying. It was the right kind of opponent, the way the timing worked out, to get him back there to get some legs under him with a big one coming up tomorrow.
He probably was really sore the day after, though.
He says he was okay. In fact, he was on the coach's show in his regular position along with Jack Nolan and Mike Bray last night. And so here's a few words from Bonzi. Jack, I think, asked him the first question about how he felt after the game and the day after yesterday.
Coach said he expected it. I expected you to play well. I don't know where you got the endurance. You hadn't played in 17 games. You missed 17 games. I couldn't tell. You probably could. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I was just really excited to play. You know, obviously it's been a while, and I think, you know, when we practiced Monday and Tuesday, it got me in a good rhythm of, you know, being back out there, running up and down a little bit, and, you know, just playing my game, you know. Just playing my game and staying in character, and I think those 2 days really helped me get back in, you know, a little bit of basketball shape.
He gets the first rebound of the game, and then 35 seconds in, he's diving on the floor. What do you think?
I loved it. I said, we missed that. I mean, he got off to a great start. But, you know, when I saw him practice Monday, I felt great about last night. When I saw him practice Tuesday, I felt even better. And really, you know, it's amazing when you haven't played in 2 months. But, you know, that's muscle memory and all of those things. And certainly I think his teammates were anxious to have him come back and play. And I think he energized the whole building, his teammates, coaches, and everybody.
I mean, I saw you the first week with the boot on. I've never seen anybody walk around in a boot like you had on, like it was a regular shoe. And I remember, like, the second day, maybe after the surgery, you called, I think, Jogo out and somebody else, and you had your scooter right at the foul line, and you challenged them to a shooting contest. You never stopped shooting the basketball.
No, that's one thing I wanted to keep doing, shooting. And, you know, my parents were telling me to do that, just make sure you're working on your shot. And I was doing that, you know. And with the boot, you know, I really wasn't feeling pain, so I knew I can shoot and kind of jump on it a little bit. And, you know, I was in the boot for so long, I felt like it was normal to me. And then, so I just was shooting with it.
I know you worked hard on the bike and everything you could do, but there's a difference between game conditioning and other kinds of conditioning, but you seem to be pretty close. I mean, did you notice at all at any time that you took him out because he was winded? You took him out to be safe.
Well, yeah, I think maybe a little bit of fatigue, but nothing crazy. And you know, we got him out before he got too tired. And the goal was, in my mind, it was about 20 minutes. He went 21, and that was just enough. And we'll inch that thing up in Charlottesville Saturday. I can guarantee you that.
So how did you get the aerobic conditioning to the level, or maintain it at the level, where you could go in and play 20 minutes of a college basketball game the first time out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every day I was with T-Row just doing workouts on the bike, and then I moved on to the curve doing, you know, workouts on the curve, which is a treadmill that you can use. And then once I found out I can play, I was trying to do some sprints, and I was doing some hurdle workouts, some agility workouts, and then slowly but surely I just was trying to get in the best basketball shape as I can.
12 points, 9 rebounds, 3 blocks, 21 minutes. Some were saying put him back in to get the double-double, but health was more important than that. Yeah. Did you know you were one rebound away from a double-double?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew. Yeah. Those Niners get you. I swear they do.
Did you keep looking at him? Like, put me back
no,
in?
No, I knew. 20 was the limit, and I knew that, so I didn't want to push it.
The amazing thing was 8 points, 4 rebounds, and a blocked shot. Less than 5 minutes into the game, you hit your first 3 shots. I know you kind of expected it, but how did it feel when you hit your first 3 shots?
Oh, it felt good. You know, just felt good being out there, put the jersey on, and play, you know, with my teammates and my brothers, especially on senior night. It was such a special night. But I just got into a good rhythm, and, you know, my teammates found me at the high post, and they went zone, and it's, It was pretty much just suing my short J, and then but it was a good win for us.
So that's Bonzi Colson, Mike Bray, along with Jack Nolan at Mike Bray's Coaches Show. The last Coaches Show of the season last night over at Aurora and here on WSBT. And the Fighting Irish, 4 o'clock tomorrow, take on Virginia, a Virginia team that just managed to squeak it out over Louisville, 67-66 last night. Maybe the addition of Bonzi and seeing Virginia kind of struggle to get it home. Maybe give us a little bit more hope tomorrow.
We keep talking about that word hope. Yeah, there's hope.
It's all hope, right?
There is hope.
Whether it's misplaced or not.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes hope can mess you up, right?
I think it's good. It's good to have hope.
Definitely. We've got Big Ten basketball coming up tonight on WSBT.
The tournament.
Yeah, Big Ten tournament is this week, of course. And Indiana got beat by Rutgers last night.
Yeah.
Man.
Low moment.
76-69, the 14th-seeded Scarlet Knights will take on Purdue. That'll be the second of the two games from the Big Ten tournament at Madison Square Garden tonight here on WSBT. 9 o'clock tonight, Purdue against Rutgers. Before that, 6:15 pregame and a 6:30 tip between Penn State and second-seeded Ohio State. Some of the other results yesterday, Penn State beat Northwestern 65-57, Wisconsin over Maryland 59-54. Two other games today, Michigan State, Wisconsin at noon. Well, that's going on right now. And at 2:30, Michigan against Nebraska. And I know this hurts Notre Dame fans, but you should probably, because this is now the start of it with the Big Ten tournament, where you have to kind of start pulling for teams to get beat. You should probably pull for Michigan against Nebraska, because even though Nebraska ended up the 4 seed to Michigan's 5 seed, Michigan has the better credentials for an at-large than Nebraska does. So Nebraska needs to lose to Michigan today. That's the kind of the first of the process as Notre Dame tries to work its way up to the bubble here in a little bit more than a week.
In Wisconsin right now, they're up 3 over Michigan State, about 3 minutes left before the half.
Okay, and as far as Notre Dame and the ACC tournament, which starts next week, if Notre Dame loses tomorrow, they would finish 8-10. They could still be the 9 seed with a Florida State loss to Boston College. They would be the 10 seed without a Florida State loss. So they need to, even if they lose tomorrow, if Florida State loses to Boston College, which has already happened in Boston once, then Notre Dame would be the 9 seed. The other way they would get the 9 seed is if they finish 9-9. That's with a win tomorrow at Virginia. They would be 9-9. If they win tomorrow, they are the 9 seed. So
it really would be impressive if they did finish 9-9.
Looking
amidst what has happened.
Oh, absolutely. And even that, now again, we're talking a lot of what ifs now, and what Notre Dame really has to do is play well regardless of result and have Bonzi play well regardless of result. Now, when I say regardless of result, I'm talking about against a team like Virginia, the better teams, both tomorrow and at the ACC tournament. If they end up being a lower seed and have to play a Wake Forest, a Pittsburgh, whoever it happens to be, they obviously have to win those games. But I'm talking about against the top teams that are going to get into the tournament, play well, regardless of result, play a close game, and hope for just essentially to make an impression on the selection committee that if they had Bonzi this whole time, that all of this other stuff, the RPI, just everything, all those numbers and analytics would look a lot different if they had Bonzi.
That's why I wouldn't want to have the job of picking these teams.
I know. And that's part of the problem, again, is you've got all these other teams who are busy trying to make their own case as well. But no one really is in this situation where they've been without. I mean, the guy was a preseason National Player of the Year candidate. You put him and Farrell together, they missed a combined 20 games this season, all at the same time.
Two best players.
Yep, absolutely. So that's a big difference. And you talk about that 7-game losing streak. They had so many close games in that stretch as well.
Imagine if they had won one or two of those.
Just imagine. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, Evan's got a game for me. I've got a game for Evan. And we will see where these games go, because neither one of us knows what the game that we're going to play is. So we are going to do that next when we return. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT coming up on 12:52, 8 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Rich Eisen Show comes your way here at 1. And we'll remind you we're brought to you by Sharpley Training, by Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, by Leck Leitner Door, by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, by Carmela's at McCree's, Edward Jones Making Sense of Investing, and by Kurt Outdoor Living. All right, just a few minutes to go. Do you want to go first?
Let's do it.
All right, Evan's going to go first. We're gonna throw some stuff.
So at the combine, right? You have to take the Wonderlic test.
Okay.
Question number one: which of these numbers is not like the other? 3, 4, 5, 7, and 11.
3, 4, 5, 7, 11. 4.
All right, you're one for one. How about this next one right here? Oh, that's all. We only get one. You're in the first percentile right now because you got it right. Okay. Second question now. Describe your physical. This is now not the Wonderlic, but that was the first sample question.
Okay.
Describe your physical build using a type of food.
What?
So like a fruit?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A vegetable?
Steak.
Okay. Describe. So you're weighing in, right? You got your weight now. Using describing it using a type of dog. What type of dog would describe your weight?
What type of dog would describe my weight? Probably a bulldog.
Nice. Yeah.
I like
bulldogs.
One?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So if you're, I know everyone, they're sponsored by a certain one, but if you had to wear a certain type of cleats, Nike, Under Armour, Adidas.
Adidas.
Okay. So let's say you're running the 40-yard dash now. Would you take your shirt off or keep it on? Off for more, to be more aerodynamic?
I would definitely stay on.
Stay on. Okay. Yeah. You see guys wearing shorts or the compression shorts. Would you go regular shorts or would you wear the compressions?
I would wear compression under the regular shorts.
Okay. So you'd go double then. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Over under 10 reps on the 225 bench press right now.
Definitely under right now.
Bad in your shoulders. Prime. In your prime.
In my prime, still probably a little bit under.
All right.
Again, bad shoulders. So
sub 5 second 40 right now.
Right now. Over.
In your prime?
Under.
Okay, where would you be?
I think I was like right around 4.9-ish, 4.8, something like that.
And then last question, measuring your vertical leap using number of credit cards.
Wow.
How many credit cards can you jump over?
I actually, in my prime, and even now it's not bad, even though my back isn't helping me anymore. In my prime, for my height, I had a really good one. Using number of credit cards. Man, that's a good question.
Well, then just say, what was your vertical?
I'd say 150. I don't know what the number
was. 150 credit cards.
150 credit
cards.
Okay,
that's good.
Because I don't know. I don't know how many credit cards would
that's
stack
all I
up
got
to.
For you.
Okay, that's good. I like that. That's actually Wonderlic questions right there?
No, the first one. The first one
was?
The rest were my own. Okay. Special question.
Man, I don't have any good stuff
that's
like
right.
that. I like those. I like those. A lot. Mine was just some word association stuff. So let's start. You know, let's do this. The idea of college basketball switching to four quarters.
I'm a little more apathetic towards that. I know Tom
really
Noy.
Care?
I know Tom Noy is not, he does not like that.
I'll have to ask Tom more about that at some point. I like it. The men's college basketball is the only major level, even including high school. That
really
doesn't
don't they already have timeouts set? So basically, there is. You just don't go. I guess you wouldn't go in.
They do have
more
media timeouts, but I like the break in between. And the NBA has it. So what's wrong with men's college basketball having it?
I never really understood the halves, I suppose.
Yeah, me either. Kyle Schwarber.
Fit.
Much more fit. Andrew Luck.
Never playing again.
You think so?
That's kind of where I am right now.
All right, we're running out of time. So I wanted to make sure that you hear this and tell me what you think. This is a mashup that I heard of two artists last night. Tell me if you can spot who the artists are and what you think. The way they did it. So,
what is this from?
It's on the internet. Round and round. Yeah, I know it's a little bit past or before your time.
That was on Guitar Hero, though.
That was Rat along with Marvin Gaye.
Interesting combination.
A very interesting, but
that sounded good.
As they were saying, like, it actually goes together really, really
so
well.
So someone just mashed that up then?
Somebody mashed it up, and they've got the whole thing, and they've got video of, like, Rat in concert and Marvin Gaye singing someplace.
I'll buy that.
Really good stuff. Goes together pretty well. All right, we'll do more of your word association next week. I liked your questions, though, definitely. Sean and Sharpley, we'll be right back. We are wrapping things up. The Rich Eisen Show is coming up next on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader, and we've got spring football practice getting ready to start. They're going to practice for a few days and then take a break for spring break, just like the last couple years or so, and then back after that and going right up until April 21st in the Blue Gold game. Looking forward to seeing some
time.
Stuff.
Football's back.
It is. It is back for sure. We've got the NFL Combine here going on this weekend. Eric Hansen joins me tonight on Sports.
Who are the Colts going to take?
Good question. We've got
talk about it tonight
this season on WSBT.